Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, September 26th. I'm Ray Graff. Today we talk baking with a trio of experts on bread. Grayling Bauer is from Sparrow Bush Bakery, a wholesale wood-fired bakery making naturally leavened bread with 100% fresh stone-ground flour in Livingston, New York. Wilson Keenan joins us from Bakery Suzanne in Saratoga. It focuses on sourdough breads from stone-milled flour and a full lineup of pastries. And then there's Amy Halloran. She's also here. You know Amy from her many appearances on this program. She is my personal grain and flour guru. Always great to have her on this program. You want to talk baking bread? 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Or email voxpop@wamc.org. Back after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's bread today on Food Friday. Joining us is Grayling Bauer. Grayling and Emma Bauer run Sparrow Bush Bakery, a wholesale wood-fired bakery making naturally leavened bread with fresh stone-ground flour. Based in Livingston, New York, the bakery supplies 1,500 loaves per week to stores and restaurants. On Saturdays, their breads, pastries, and pantry goods can be found at the Hudson Farmers Market, where they're honored to be an integral part of the local food community. Wilson Keenan owns and operates Bakery Suzanne in Saratoga Springs, New York. Bakery Suzanne focuses on sourdough bread from stone-milled flour, much of it milled on site, and the rest is sourced locally. Also, a full lineup of pastries, croissants, and their relatives, whatever they are, featuring, listen, seasonal deliciousness is all about what we're doing today. Joining us is our friend, you might know her, Amy Halloran, an activist, amateur bakery historian, a great baker herself, and the author of the new bread basket. The number to call here is 800-348-2551. If you have a question about baking bread, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Grayling, Wilson, Amy, welcome to the show. How y'all doing?
Oh, so excited to be here.
Well, that's one. What about the rest of you?
Very happy to be here.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Try not to show it too much. Don't be too exuberant, Grayling. Well, we'll start with you then, since you're champing at the bit. Tell us a little bit about Sparrow Bush Bakery, how it came to be, how you came to be a baker. You look on the young side, no offense, but how did you learn this?
Age is just a number.
Is it? Wait until you're 61.
I've always been interested in food, and a friend gave me some sourdough starter, which kind of led to me baking a lot of bread at home. And just kind of right time, right place. Needed to figure out what I was doing with my life in my mid-20s. And decided to give it a shot, and I got a job, and the rest is history.
Right. So you just love it. You found that you had the knack?
It spoke to me in a lot of ways, I guess.
Yeah, well, we'll learn a little bit about those ways in a minute. Wilson Keenan, welcome to the program. Tell us about Bakery Suzanne.
Oh,
by the way, your name is not Suzanne, so how did this come to be with the name?
Yeah, the name, the bakery simply is named after my mom, Suzanne.
That's nice.
I did not grow up with bread at all. I'm from South Carolina. It was more biscuits and starch, but not bread. It was until I lived out in California and got to live next to Tartine Bakery, so I had good bread for the first time, and that kind of led me, down a path.
Well, there's a knack for good biscuits, too. Don't besmirch the biscuits.
That is true.
But we'll talk bread today. Amy Halloran, I feel like you were just on the show a month ago.
It was a minute.
Really?
It was just a minute.
By the way, you brought little green potatoes. What's up with that?
Those are pawpaws.
Pawpaw.
Because my son said, you're going to see Ray. You got to give him a pawpaw.
Well, this is interesting.
Yeah.
So how do you eat these things? Okay, so those who don't know, and I grew up around here, and I didn't even know pawpaw until recently.
Yeah. Well, we grew up when we weren't just eating outdoors like my kid does. So like pawpaws. So these were grown down at Raddix, which is an urban farm down in the south end of Albany. They do look like a potato, but I don't know, a rather more attractive potato.
Okay.
Because you wouldn't want to eat a green potato. And you just cut in it. I'm using just a plastic knife to cut it.
Let me see the cross
inside
section.
Is a beautiful, creamy custardy looking.
It's the color
fruit.
Of an egg yolk.
Oh, do you have to put it down like that?
I'm not putting it down.
No, I don't like eggs. So any egg reference.
Wait a minute, hold it. You don't like eggs?
No, I don't like
you
eggs.
You make baked goods. You got to have eggs.
They're
right?
Okay in the baked goods, but.
You know what? Before you start mangling.
We don't hardly know each other, Ray.
What's
we
with this?
We don't hardly know each other. Okay, so I gave you a postcard that says, what's your bread map? And that is part of the exhibit over at Opalka Gallery.
Oh, you're part of this. Yeah.
I'm part of this. Compass Roses is a Pittsburgh-based org or group who invites people to make a map of their experiences in the area. And so, of course, what's my experience is bread, or at least the experience I really like to play with. And so I went to the Albany County Hall of Records and looked at old Sanborn fire insurance maps.
And which we've talked about on the show.
Yeah, yeah. And so I made a map of the
bakeries.
And with the help of a person named Atlas from North Carolina,
no
who's
way.
A cartographer.
Okay. Yeah. Atlas, really?
Yes, really. And so he made me my map, and then I borrowed a toaster from some friends who have 100 toasters at all time. Toasters are, yeah, that's.
Of course, you know someone with 100 toasters. Of course you do.
They're antiquarians. They're really amazing. They loaned me a toaster. I put these postcards that are little writing exercises for people.
Okay.
Because.
Okay, so it says, where's the bread in your city, in your sandwich, in yourself? What does the dinner roll remember? Draw or write about it here, and this is a postcard-sized card, and there's a spot to write a couple paragraphs there. Has anybody done it?
I ran out, I think, of about, how many did I get made? 350. There's probably 50 left. So people are taking them. People are really responsive.
That's
cool. We like the shape of, you know, I mean, this is a dreaded American regular slice of bread, but it's super evocative, right? It like means something. And so people are sending me pictures
nice.
Of what they've written. I brought it to a senior center for a talk yesterday where I could not stop talking about factory bread and the history in the area, and then I left them with the postcard to write about their bread memories.
And do you know these two guys?
We know of each other's work, right? Like, I know Grayling's predecessor, who started Sparrow Bush, a guy named Antoine, and I'm pathetically enchanted by Mills and Flower and maybe it's not pathetically.
No kidding.
It's just
really?
Obsessively.
You could have fooled me.
So, anywhere I know. So these guys are on my contemporary map. The map I made for, that was 1912. So we're up to 2025. And my map is currently wherever the mills that these guys use are, or people who are using regionally grown and ground flour.
All right, so let's talk bread. Feel free to jump in, as you're clearly an expert here. And let's start with you, Grayling. The things that you supply to restaurants, 1,500 loaves per week, that's a lot.
It's a lot of bread.
How big is the operation? Is it just you and the wife?
No, we have two full-time employees, shout out Molly and Steven, and some part-time help, Harriet, Eleanor, who make it all possible, and Karen, who drives our bread far and wide.
How far and how wide?
Basically between Great Barrington, Mass, and Kingston, New
York.
That's
a big stretch.
Yep,
yeah.
Yep. Different days, we go different places. But and then my wife and I are very full-time, every day getting something done there.
And she's on board with this as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's
yeah.
great.
We actually, we met at the bakery because she was working at a dairy farm nearby. I needed somewhere for leftover unsold market bread to go. They had pigs at this dairy farm, and she came and picked up the leftover bread to.
So the pigs are eating very well.
Exactly. Yes, these are well-fed pigs.
Well, what have you? Okay, we'll get back to what you have learned about baking bread over these years that you have now run Sparrow Bush. But Wilson Keenan, what's the secret to sourdough?
Oh my gosh, humility. I think
I love it.
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's just not predictable. And, you know, it behaves in ways that we don't fully understand, and there's nowhere to really read about it, or someone can tell you everything you need to know. So it's just, yeah, I just tell people, like, take it in, observe, learn, respond to it, but not too quickly.
Now, as a biscuit guy, why sourdough? I mean, there are other kinds of bread, as Graylin can tell you.
I mean, I think it really, you can develop textures that you can't if you don't use sourdough, and flavor. And it was very, my experience was very similar to Grayling's. You get this starter for the first time and you take care of it kind of like a baby. And then it just becomes like a creative partner that you're then kind of making bread with.
So what I've learned from all these shows with Amy and now talking to you guys, bread makers are pretty manic. I mean, you guys are really into this stuff. I mean, it's like a lifestyle, right? Or am I wrong?
You have to be a little crazy to do what we do.
All right, let's take a break now, and we'll talk everybody off the ledge. 800-348-2551. Grayling Bauer, Wilson Keenan, Amy Halloran, bread baking. We'll get to the phones and your questions coming up. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. I have pawpaw all over myself. All right, it's Food Friday. We're joined today by Amy Halloran. You know Amy. Wilson Keenan from Bakery Suzanne and Grayling Bauer of Sparrow Bush Bakery. It's a show about bread, but Amy brought a pawpaw, and they're messy.
They're really messy. But they are, you know, the older I get, the more I think about the, or no, I don't know. For a long time, I didn't think about where food comes from.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
But then I ran a farmer's market in Troy, and I started to realize I knew nothing about food. And
you ran the Troy farmer's
yes.
market?
Yeah. I was its first paid manager.
No way.
Yeah, there were 10 vendors.
Oh.
It was nuts. It was nuts. And that's where I learned that I needed to shift my writing, which was all just magical realism, into reality and try to write about the stories of people who are making food so that we can get educated. But along the way, you know, I learned so much about foods that grow somewhere. I mean, Wilson, you're talking about your biscuit history just proves that we are where we eat or something like that. But soft wheat grows in the South. Soft wheat is best for biscuits.
Huh.
That's why there's a biscuit culture down there. And it just makes total sense to me. But you don't think about the regionality of foods, you know, in this landscape where we can get anything all the time. It's not natural to think about where foods come from. But these pawpaws, they are native to North America.
What do you think of it, Wilson? Be honest.
I think it's got some nice attributes that maybe a mango has, but texture is a little slimy.
It's a little bit on the I would say that, but it's delicious slimy though. Don't get me wrong.
The first year I had them in our yard, I was like, "What is this?" I was anti. I had my finger, you know, no pawpaws.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And now I can't get enough of them. I'm a little bit
really.
Yeah,
it smells like an orange.
Did you try it?
Yeah. You just snack on them like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know what? The bread show is taking an odd turn, but here we go. The number here is 800-348-2551. Let's grab a call here before we get too far involved. Oh, hello, George and Castleton.
Hello, George and Castleton.
That's what I'm hearing myself. Boy, I sound tremendous.
All right,
let's put him on hold until he figures it out. That was weird, huh? You know?
He didn't turn his radio off, I
Yeah.
No, that was much too when you don't turn your radio off, the delay is quite a bit longer. This was a quick. Huh. Okay. So something was going on with the phones. Maybe George call back. That's a great idea. I'm going to hang up on you now. Are you there?
You guys hear me?
Oh yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm here.
What happened?
Hi. So I make two sourdough country loaves. One is 10% whole wheat and like 75% hydration. And the other is 15% rye, that's an 80% hydration. The wheat recipe has you shape the loaves, put them in the fridge, and then take them the next day, take them out of the fridge and right into the oven, and you bake them. The rye has you do the cold ferment, then you shape them, and you do a bench rise for like 3 hours the day that you bake it. And so my question is, why does one get a bench rise and the other not? And is there any harm in cooking the rye according to the wheat protocol?
All right. Which one of you guys want to tackle that?
I'll take it. I would say there should, at 15% rye, the rest being, I assume, you know, medium or high protein white bread flour, right? Is that right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, I think that there would be no problem at all doing that in the same method as your wheat-based bread. Where you want to be more careful is when you get significantly higher in your rye percentage. That becomes very hard to refrigerate at any stage just because there's going to be so much activity it won't slow down.
And the activity...
So what's the purpose? Yeah, what's the purpose of that bench rise after refrigeration?
Well, really, you're just, you know, you have to see refrigeration as a tool to press the pause button on your fermentation. So it doesn't really matter when you're letting that rise happen. If you let it happen before you put it in the fridge and your fridge is cold enough that it'll completely slow everything down, or if you're refrigerating everything before it's fully fermented, putting it in the fridge and taking it out and letting it finish ferment at room temperature. If your fridge is, and most home refrigerators are cold enough that they're going to completely stop any growth of yeast. And so I recommend, you know, watching something ferment on your counter at room temperature before you even think about the refrigerator.
All right, George.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Okay. While you were talking to George Grayling, I tried this bread. Tell me what this is. So it is magical.
So that is our 100% rye bread.
Really?
100% wholemeal rye. We put 12% maple syrup. And sorry, I'm speaking in baker's percentages,
which might
not mean anything to any.
I just go with the flow. You can say whatever you want.
It's got a combination of sunflower and flax seeds in there, a lot of water, and it's a combination of rye flour and rye meal. So it has a little bit of coarseness from the grittier meal pieces that we mill the rye more coarsely with.
I got to tell you, this is unbelievably good bread, and it's entirely a different animal than mass-produced rye bread. I mean, I wouldn't have even pegged it as a rye. It has a nutty sort of mellow taste that is, it's amazing, man.
Thank you. Well, probably most mass-produced rye bread doesn't actually have any rye in
it.
Or much, if just a little
super
bit.
Super tiny, and it's... primary flavor is caraway.
Yeah, people have decided that caraway is the flavor of rye.
Because it's in a lot of rye breads,
exactly.
But it's not rye at all.
Yep.
Grayling, before we get to the next call, I just wonder, you guys do pastries too, right? I mean, I'm sorry, Wilson, at Bakery Suzanne, you do pastries and such too?
Yeah, we're about 50-50. Yeah.
What do you prefer? What is easier and what is more enjoyable for you to bake?
I generally... would come down on the side of bread.
Yeah.
That's where I started.
Yeah.
But pastry is just a whole different world, but it does open up the use of all sorts of like local seasonal ingredients. And I like being able to manipulate fruit and vegetable to like pair with pastry. So.
And you're using local fruits when possible?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. As soon as we get into the season, we'll go down into the Hudson Valley and get stuff early. And then gradually we can get stuff up here.
Let's grab a call here, unless, Amy, you want to chime in.
Well.
Don't talk with your mouth full.
I'm not.
No, go ahead.
Jeez.
Go ahead.
So, one thing we haven't talked about is the grain at all, right?
That's true.
So, these guys are going to the trouble of milling whole grains
right.
into the flour that they're using, which is a really big extra layer and expense for any bakery. So I wanted to know what you think of that choice, what made you do that choice, and where are you getting these grains from?
And is it a cost-effective choice? I mean, the labor that you're putting in as opposed to buying it milled.
Right, yeah. How do you value your own time? Also, these mills aren't cheap either.
No.
Well, for us, it really just is the whole purpose and meaning of our bakery. It's, you know, what is bread like if we're only using grain that is grown within, you know, less than 300 miles from the bakery in New York, grown organically. And it really, you know, people try to attribute certain parts of our process to the flavor that we're able to get out of these breads. But really, it's about everything being milled fresh, in-house, stone ground, very flavorful and nutritious.
Wilson, you also do a lot of milling, but not all.
Yeah, we're not doing all. I mean, I think for us, we basically mill all of our whole grains. And then when we would otherwise be sifting the grain that we mill, we're partnering with Ground Up Grain. And they have a granddad version of our stone mill. So we rely on them to basically sift and then deal with all of the wheat bran and all of that stuff. Because we did it in a tiny room and we were sifting everything and milling everything. And then it became a little bit nuts because we were trying to find pigs or some other animals to eat the bran that we were sifting.
Right.
And it's just a lot of headaches, and Grayling doing all of it is, like, props to that. Like, that's it's not easy to do.
You know, I'm having a little more of this rye. Do not take offense in any way, yeah. Grayling, but there used to be this brown bread that I had when I was a kid. My mother would get it. It was in a can. And there is an element of this. It's not the same in any way, but there's something in that flavor that harkens back. Amy, are you with me on this?
Absolutely.
What is it?
I haven't brought you the steamed brown bread yet.
I don't know, but I've had it.
I love it. Yeah, so steamed brown bread has rye, cornmeal, and sometimes wheat.
Yeah.
And lots of molasses. So it's super similar flavor profile. And I love that.
Me too.
Loaf.
Yeah.
For a billion reasons.
Yep. All right. Go ahead.
No, too many ideas. We'll just stop them all.
You can see them all trying to jump out of your head. All right, let's go back to the phones then. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Bread Today with Grayling Bauer of Sparrow Bush Bakery, Wilson Keenan of Bakery Suzanne, and Amy Halloran, who is everywhere all the time. Let's go to Chris in Saratoga Springs. Chris, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you so much for taking my call and for this really fascinating show. For a novice baker who is interested in starting from home with kind of no experience with bread baking, I find this all super intimidating. Could you, like, break down an entry-level experience for a home baker to be making their first loaf of bread?
Chris, Amy's raising her hand like
teach,
it's a classroom.
Teach, pick
Go
on
ahead.
Me.
Go ahead.
Okay, so, Chris, I am going to suggest that you start out making English muffins because they are... If you're going to start out with sourdough, getting used to managing your sourdough starter through an English muffin is way better than trying to manage all the layers of making a loaf of bread. An English muffin is a griddle bread. It doesn't need to rise so high. One of the big things about, I can't even remember if you were talking about entry level bread making or sourdough bread making, which did you want? I got on my own track.
Sourdough, ideally.
Yeah.
For sure,
so
for the health reasons.
I wrote up a recipe for English muffins. If you Google my name, Amy Halloran, English muffins, you'll get to thekitchen.com, and it's whole rundown of how to do this. And if you start there, and this is how I trained myself because I was really scared of bread baking because it was this, I met it as this profession that all these people did. Even though I went to classes at King Arthur and that were geared to home bakers and I really got good instruction, I built it up in my head and I couldn't get over it. So start with getting to know your starter with English muffins. They're really great. And you can, you know, let us know how you do.
Okay.
How's that?
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Fellas, you want to jump in at all?
I think that's great advice. English muffins.
Yeah, and honestly, I think most of the time people kind of forget that the health of the starter really determines the bread, so it's much better to have a few weeks doing English muffins and get that starter going.
Or months. I mean, it was an entire year.
It's going to take time for the starter to be healthy enough anyways to make bread, so I would definitely start there.
And then what about starting your starters? Do you guys, I mean, like not starting from scratch, because I don't believe that. You get your starter from someone else, Chris, okay? You just get some starter from somebody.
Yeah.
And
you can come to Bakery Suzanne and get some.
Yeah, you can come to any bakery and knock on their door for that. And what kind of flour do you guys use for your starters? Do you keep a wheat starter?
Yeah, everything is our sifted wheat that we mill in house and feed it.
We just use our whole red wheat.
I keep a rye starter, and that's all I believe in.
Why?
Because rye has the most enzyme activity on any, you know, of any grain. And so I want that busyness to work for me. Mm. And also I'm able to park it, you know, because sometimes I only bake once a month because I get a little distracted with trying to figure out where the bakeries were in 1911. So it's rye works for me.
Okay. Well, Chris, thanks for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Wilson Keenan, what's your oldest starter?
Oh, I mean, it's not even that old. I think it's 2018. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, what is the – I asked you this one time, Amy. What's the oldest starter ever? I mean, does it go back to Egyptian times, or what do you got?
So, yeah, supposedly. I mean, people do archaeological digs, and then they'll scrape up a little bit, and everybody gets all excited about the provenance and all this stuff. But your sourdough is going to be yours and with you as soon as you start to touch it. So there's a lot – I really believe in – you know, bread lore, but I don't think we should get, you know, romantic about the starter because, so there's even a sourdough expert who was talking about this. Her name is Deb, and she's on the Bread Bakers Guild of America listserv. I can't remember her last name, but she broke it down. It's, you know, the sourdough is current. The starter is, right? No?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'm current too. Like,
well, let's not jump to conclusions.
No. I'm becoming an ancestor as we speak.
All right.
But.
Okay. Oh, well, you know, 800-348-2551. Before we take a break, and unfortunately we have to take one in a moment, then we'll get back to the phones. Let's talk about water for a minute. Mm-hmm. You know, when we do pizza shows, we talk about pizza dough, and the guys who do that always say water is such a key thing. Where do you source your water? Does it matter when you're making bread? Start with you, Grayling.
Well, we're on a well, so
really,
we have one option for where our water comes from. I think it could matter to an extent, but I think that it is like maybe the oldness of a sourdough starter is maybe romanticized a little bit in the baking world.
Interesting.
We had to move the bakery 3 years ago. Totally different water. It tastes different out of the tap. I can't really say that the bread is markedly different.
You agree, Wilson?
100%.
So you don't think water makes a big play?
I think that you need to be careful like you would source any ingredient. So if you've got water that has chlorine in it, not ideal.
Yeah.
Or if you're using really soft water, from a water softener, also not ideal because it is depleted of minerals. And so those things can matter, but no, I don't really believe in like the New York water or whatever.
Well, I don't know. I think that there's a pizza guy in Troy who'll tell you the Troy water is very good, and it's one of the reasons his dough is amazing.
And, you know, my son is managing that water now. I mean, not entirely, but I have another son. I've got one son on Radix, and the other one works for the Troy Water Department.
No way.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. It's Bread Today and Baking with Amy Halloran, Wilson Keenan, and Grayling Bauer. We'll be back. All right, here's the obligatory mention of the lockbox. The fun drive opens October 6th. On Monday morning at 6 a.m., October 6th, we will be wall-to-wall fundraising. The lockbox is open now, and it's a way to shorten that fun drive. Here's where we are right now in the lockbox, thanks to you. $451,246. That's remarkable. So many people are standing up for independent radio. Radio that depends on the listener and depends on the underwriter. If you want to make a pledge, do it now. It's open 24/7 at WAMC.org. Every dollar will count on minute one of the fund drive, October 6th. It's WAMC.org. Food Friday today with Grayling Bauer of Sparrow Bush Bakery. You ever think about doing retail aside from farmer market?
Yeah, we're actually getting pretty close to opening something.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Do you want alert here? You want to let us know?
I don't even know what to say. This is the first time I've ever talked about it publicly.
Really?
Honest. Yeah. We're not going to let people inside the building because that opens up some cans of worms.
What, do you have a window?
We're going to have a window. Window, parking lot, some tables, chairs outside.
Oh, interesting.
Yep, yep,
okay.
Yep.
Wilson Keenan here from Bakery Suzanne. We still haven't tried any of your pastries yet. I mean, should we?
Sure.
Yeah. All right. So let's. Yeah. All right, Amy, I'm going to let you do the honors on that.
Okay.
And then Amy Halloran is here, of course, who is our go-to on just about any subject that I need, short of Medical Monday. But I'm sure she could do that, too. Speaking of Medical Monday, let's go to James in Kingston. James, you're on.
Hi. I just was listening to your show here, and I hate to put you all you're in a jolly mood.
Oh yes, always.
I just wanted to say that pawpaws are very seriously they're toxins rather in them, and you should be warned when you eat them.
Really? So I'm going to drop dead during the show or what?
No. No, it's a while back now. A friend of mine had a pawpaw tree in her backyard and asked me, to share it, and I ate a piece. And the minute I did that, I had to go to the bathroom, throw up, and the room was spinning. I did a search then, which you can do also.
All right.
On pawpaws, and there's a neurotoxin in them.
Right.
And they're poisonous. And,
you know what, James?
I even went to a local.
I will look up that, but I will tell you something. If I end up having to hurl during the program, I'm going to blame Amy Halloran, all right?
I'll take the blame for any food problems we have.
So far, so good, though. But, I didn't have that much. I know people do eat them, and I believe that they've been eaten for a long time by indigenous populations and such. But I'll look that up, and thank you for the call. 800-348-2551. It's baking today. It's a little Medical Monday. It's the Science Forum all rolled into one with Amy Halloran, Wilson Keenan, and Grayling Bauer. Wilson, this looks amazing. What do we got here?
You're eating a chocolate pecan or pecan croissant.
You're from the South, and you said pecan. That's wrong.
I say both. I get so confused every time I have to say the word.
Really?
Yeah.
Because up here, I say pecan.
Pecan?
No, pecan, of course. People, listen, on this program, I've had callers like, hey, nitwit, it's pecan. So there we go. Yeah, all right, so I'm going to try this. Amy, why don't you ask a pithy question while I have a bite?
Okay, so what is going on with the croissant? And
so instead of doing an almond croissant, we chose to go with something a little bit more southern. So we replaced the almonds with pecans. So it's basically a toasted pecan cream. and instead of, traditionally you would use, a rum syrup with an almond croissant, we use a bourbon syrup. It's just a great way to use croissants that don't sell. but also, the twice-baked nature of it makes it a little bit more caramelized.
This is one of the greatest things I've ever had.
Wow.
I mean, I love this. And once you said it had bourbon, I realized why I loved it so much.
There you go.
What bourbon do you use?
We use a bourbon called High West. It's out of Salt Lake City.
Wild. And what about the other delicacy we have here?
Other one is a pain au raisin. So it's I kind of describe it as, in France, it's just like at the airport, it's at the gas station, it's like everywhere, you know, but ubiquitous. And here in America, you might call it a rum raisin. But this is basically, for us, we take currants, soak them in rum agricole, so a more vegetal, like funky rum from Martinique. And my best friends in high school were from Martinique, so I had this connection. So I brought that rum. We steep the currants in it, and then we use a vanilla pastry cream, roll it up, and then it gets brushed with more of that rum syrup at the end.
Whoa.
I think there's some serious genius going on there. That's real. I mean, you guys both, this is amazing. The number here is 800-348-2551 if you'd like to talk to Wilson Keenan or Graylin Bauer or Amy Halloran or all three at once. Let's go to Jim in Adams, Massachusetts. Jim, you're on.
Yay, Ray.
Hello.
Yay, everybody else there on the program today, on Amy Halloran's program today.
All right, smart guy, what do you got?
I read a book a couple years back on sourdough starters and baking and all, and the author was very thoroughly researching everything in her book and all, and doing her own sourdough baking. But what she suggested was, once you get a sourdough starter established, that you should try getting samples of other starters and introducing them into your starter. Otherwise, your starter can be taken over by, you know, one or several dominant strains of microbes, and you get kind of a...
So this is the blended like scotch sort of philosophy. You blend the scotch, and then you have something that is consistent and repeatable. Wilson, what do you think?
I have never tried this. I defer to you guys.
I've never heard of this.
Graylin.
We have a bakery in Berkshire County that makes a all rye bread.
Tremendous.
Sourdough leavened as well. All of his products are sourdough leavened. He's famous nationwide and a little bit internationally, probably by now, too.
Yeah, Berkshire Mountain Bread. They're great.
All right, Jim, thanks a lot. Graylin, you want to comment on that?
I've also never heard of that, I don't think. But like Amy was saying earlier, I think, you know, you could have an ancient starter that you start feeding, and then it becomes your own. So you could introduce other starters into your starter, but if you feed it flour and...
Yeah, so, I mean, the only time I, you know, do something new to my flour is when I forget it so long it becomes, you know, like, I don't know, a vacuum cleaner bag in the fridge. And I got a new starter once after I taught a class with my friend Ellie, and there were just little bits of the jar in the jar left over from her stuff. And I brought that, I fed it, and I brought it home. And that
when
was
you
probably,
say you fed it, what do you mean?
You feed, so a starter is fed on flour and water. It's flour and water in certain ratios. And
this is fermentation, right?
Yeah, to get to fermentation.
So when you are in your kitchen, there are theoretically different spores floating around than in Wilson's, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in Grayling. So everybody, after a while, is going to have their own sort of terroir.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I don't know that. I think that if you keep it well-fed, you keep it going, you have good flour, I don't see why you would need to introduce somebody else to the process. Somebody else being somebody else's.
Yeah, if it gives you more confidence, then that's great.
By the way, the thing with the ham is really delicious. What is that?
Well, I was told that you like ham.
Who told you that? It's not wrong, but I don't know how you knew. What?
Okay, so in the silence, I will fill the silence with another fact. So,
all right.
Wilson, you brought up ground up grain. So, ground up grain is attached to a malt house named Valley Malt. That was the first malt house in New England after about 100 years. And then they expanded to be a flour mill called Ground Up Grain. They're over in Holyoke running on the hydroelectric remnants. I mean, they're very active, but the hydroelectric remnants of 19th century development, that's pretty cool. And they make great flour. as well. They, all of these people are doing something really new, seeking out grains from our region, giving farmers a reason to plant food grade grains in the ground, because most of what farmers are growing is corn and soy. Our agricultural system has switched to that. And to get a farmer to switch back, I don't know if we're not asking for a past to return, right?
Right.
But to get a farmer to switch to food grade grains is a big deal.
Is that not a good business decision? Is that why it doesn't
it's
happen?
It's tough.
Is it?
It's tough. It's a lot harder to grow food grade grains when you're not in an arid summer season. Wheat is a desert crop. So, you know, although this summer was very dry, it was too dry. Not ideal for growing anything.
Well, it sure was dry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the farmers that...
And really wet in the spring. I mean...
Yeah. So it was hard to get grains in the ground, hard to get... It's just so interesting how much work has to happen before all the work you guys have to do. You know, these baker's hours are long. You know, you have long days, right? And always tending, even if it's just mentally, to the dough. But that's also going on all the way back to the ground with...
See that in the dough. The way the dough behaves is reflective of when it was harvested and how it grew. And
Every year is a little different,
Every
right?
Every year is a little different. It's
Every
true.
Season's yep. a little different. Yep. Where are you guys getting your grains from?
Well, we have farms within 20 minutes drive of the bakery. Stonehouse Grain... the farm at Miller's Crossing is now growing a lot of really good wheat that we're using. Mm-hmm. Stuart Farr in Ankrumdale,
yeah,
he's the best. We've been using his rye pretty consistently for a little while now. We also sell his cold-pressed sunflower oil and
yes.
other goodies that he produces at our farmer's market. So
that's great.
Yep.
That's great.
And then otherwise, a little bit further away, you know, maybe out in like the Finger Lakes region.
Really? You go that far, huh?
Yep, sure. Yep. Peter Martin's Seneca.
Bean and Grain.
Yep. Big yeah. one.
You know them all, Amy.
Many. I know many of them.
There's not, I mean, you run into the same people.
Yeah,
it's a
yeah.
very, pretty small
It's a small
community.
Circuitry, right?
Because there are only so many people willing to put in the work necessary to grow these kinds of grains in our region, which are really hard to do.
Given the hours, given the work, is it worth it, Grayling?
I don't know what else I would do. So I would say so.
How about you, Wilson?
Same answer, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you see yourself now at this point, and you guys are both pretty young, doing anything else?
I don't know. I mean, I think I like just participating in food more broadly so I can see other things in the future. But I don't know. I also just really crave depth. So bread has always been something I could just keep studying. It's kind of like rice and sushi or something. It's like it's just kind of fractal in its nature. You can just keep going and keep going and keep going. So I don't know. I'll always bake, but I may do more.
Do you like serving the public? I gather Bakery Suzanne is a retail establishment. I mean, this ham croissant is or whatever the bread is.
Amazing. Yeah, we do both. It's 50-50. We like to work with chefs and restaurants and other retail outlets, farm stands. But then, you know, I also love having people into the shop where we can serve things in the way that we want people to eat them.
What is this bread, by the way?
It's on a baguette.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Baguette?
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
Well, there is a few minutes left if you want to get a call in here. 800-348-2551. Wilson Keenan, what does the future hold for you in 26?
Ooh, 2026.
It's coming up, you know.
I know. It's coming up fast. I mean, we're growing our team. We're just a little smaller than Grayling's team, and I feel like we're right on the verge of being able to be open 5 days a week. So that would be really big for us because I want to keep the bakery just always running. These sourdough cultures need to be in a rhythm, and the bakery itself just functions better if it just stays open.
Yeah.
So we started off and it was just 2 days a week, and now we're trying to march towards 5 to 6.
And what about you, Grayling? aside from the now mentioned retail angle.
I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
That's just going to open up a lot of doors for us. I mean, we do a lot of pastries and prepared foods at the farmer's market, but certain things just you can't load into a van at 8 in the morning and still enjoy them at 1 p.m. in the afternoon. So it's going to change a little bit what we're able to offer to the people.
Can you guys make the bottom line work in this economy?
We're doing just fine.
Doing just fine? Yeah. Yeah.
I have a question for them.
Right.
Okay, so I know that we bakery customers have expectations, and we want the same things over and over again. So do you have room within your repertoire to experiment? And if so, what are the experiments that you're doing now?
It's easier in the wintertime.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, from May through Christmas, we're just hit the ground running, doing the same thing every day, every week, full capacity, no room to really, you know, very little margin for error.
Yeah.
So admittedly, not as much time as I would like to be able to have fun and experiment with things.
When you're running full tilt like that, something breaks. You know, there's always these little things that then you're just trying to keep things up and running, operational, versus the winter. There's just more flexibility.
How long have you two guys known each other?
3 or 4 years now,
maybe. And you're theoretically competitors. It's all collegial in that.
You know, it's funny. Even the other bakeries in Hudson, you know, 10 minutes drive from where we are, when a new place opens, it doesn't really seem to affect us. We can kind of live in our, I think there's just enough variety that people, you know, want to shop around, and we don't really seem to eat into each other. So
well, that's good. And, you know, we're almost out of time here. I don't know. Do we have time for one more? All right. Linda in Chatham, you have to go 15 seconds here, Linda. Go ahead.
Okay. I'll try to be fast. I wondered about brewers, grains that are used in the brewery process for making beer. And then they apparently can still be used and ground into flour. And there are some certain, I don't know, breads and crackers that are made using that. How does that fit into everything that you guys do?
Wilson,
do
you first.
Is it a cool thing?
It's very hard to control these because they're they've already had a lot of their nutrition taken out, and they'll interfere with the rising of a bread. Have you ever experimented with
Admittedly, I have not. So.
Yeah, so there are some large-scale projects that are trying to take spent bakery grains and turn them into another kind of flour that you use in addition to regular flour, but you can't really go 100% on
them. Well, thanks for that call. Hey, listen, if people want to find out about Sparrow Bush Bakery Grailing, how do they do that?
www.sparrowbushbakery.com. Follow us on Instagram, Sparrow Bush Bakery.
All right, fair enough. And Wilson Keenan, Bakery Suzanne.
BakerySuzanne.com. We do a weekly newsletter if you want some just bleeding heart life of running a bakery. Sign up for that. That's probably the best way to go.
Cool.
It is really good. I've been reading it.
Amy, how do people find out about A, the art exhibit, and B, everything else you do?
So, Flower Ambassador on Instagram.
Yes, indeed. Well, good luck all, and thank you for being here. Support comes from Pioneer Valley Food Tours, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering walking and bicycle food tours that explore local food and beverages from source to table, pioneervalleyfoodtours.com. And Berkshire Agricultural Ventures, a community nonprofit supporting local farms and strengthening the food system here for our farmers, berkshireagventures.org. Thanks again to Grayling Bauer, Wilson Keenan, and Amy Halloran for being here today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the calls and the questions. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, Ed Rosen, who's such an efficient screener, he's already halfway out the door. Thanks, Ed, for screening the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Have a lovely weekend. We'll see you Monday for a Medical Monday.